My Eagle enthusiasts, it's Fairway Rollin' presented by FanDuel. Major season is here and you can get in on all the long drives, big putts, and major moments with FanDuel. Check out live PGA Tour bets like longest drive, round leaders, matchups, birdie or better, and more. Plus, track every shot in the app and watch select par three holes while you place your bets. Download the app today and bet with FanDuel, the official betting operator of the PGA Tour. Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. You must be 21 years old or older and present in select states. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, from superchargers and brakes to exhaust kits and beyond, eBay Motors levels your baby up to its peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Yo, yo, birdie buddies. This week's Fairway Rollin' brought to you, as always, by our good friends at Callaway Golf, makers of the brand new Maverick Fairway Woods. These Fairway Woods are complete innovations. They have all the technology you would expect: jailbreak technology, triaxial carbon crown, face cup. But Callaway put to work artificial intelligence to get a different face to work with the specifications of each head at every loft. I have in my possession a Maverick Max 3 wood, extremely forgiving, 200cc, nice big face, weighted to promote easy launch and a distance-enhancing Joe House draw. You have to get on the Maverick Max. Low leading edge for better performance on thin shots. That could come in handy as well. Check out the Maverick Fairway Woods at CallawayGolf.com. Hello, friends, and welcome to this golf podcast. Unlike any other, yes, indeed. You've made it. We are here. It is another green edition of Fairway Roll in the Golf Podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network, presented by Callaway Golf. I am your starter, Joe House, my Eagle enthusiast. Jam-packed show this week. We were fortunate enough to pull in the author of a profile of Brooks Koepka that has been making the rounds. GQ correspondent Daniel Riley is on to tell us about what went into this story about Brooks. And we had to grab our pal Jason Sobel from the Action Network, because the Action Network and the PGA Tour just cut a deal where the Action Network is serving as the platform, the betting platform, the golf gambling platform for the tour. I can't wait to hear what it is that Sobel and the Action Network have cooked up. But let's talk to our man, Danny Riley, first and get a little insight into Brooks Koepka. The first tee is open. Let's go over there and throw a peg in the ground. All right, my birdie buddies, now on the tee, this gentleman authored a magazine profile last week that caught the golf world by storm, because we have an insatiable appetite for all things Brooks Koepka. He is a correspondent for GQ magazine, Daniel Riley. What's happening, Danny boy?
Hey, House, thank you for having me on. I can't wait to talk about Koepka with you.
Yes, well, thank you very much for writing the story and springing it on us. It is an interesting time to be sort of looking at Brooks and his place in the game and what 2020 might hold for him, because on the one hand, he is still working his way back off of injury and has been complaining recently about his knee affecting his performance. On the other hand, we don't have any majors coming up yet, so we're not going to make any rash judgments about where he is. But he's been plenty candid in interviews and wherever folks are sticking a microphone in his face about various aspects of the game, his opinions on a whole bunch of things. And your story was a top to bottom treatment of that. I want to begin with this. You said on your very own tweeter that Brooks is probably the most interesting athlete profile that you've ever worked on.
Well, what's interesting about Brooks is that you have this player who is not like, 22 years old or anything like that. He's 29. He's been around. He's no longer number one, but was for much of last year, number one player in the world. And still had that thing following him around of just not quite being a household name yet. People not fully knowing who this guy is. He keeps his cards pretty close to his vest, although he was starting to use the megaphone a little bit more liberally last year, talking about things like slow play or just kind of little jabs at the game of golf in general. And so in that sense, I had never worked on a piece where it was an athlete who had succeeded so much and was literally the number one player in the world when I was working on the story, and who had simultaneously not had hardly anything written about him in a sort of deep, revealing way. Certainly there had been lots of coverage of his victories and certain things that were known about him, but both he and I acknowledged the fact that for that coverage, there still was not a ton that had gotten way beneath the surface into some of the, not just the way that he thinks about golf and other sports and his sort of reputation, but also just little innocuous things about how he lives his life and the things that he, considers important to him, whether that's, as in the piece, sort of this group of friends that he has that have nothing to do with golf and the way that he kind of likes, cordoning himself off among a non-golfing set when it comes to free time, the way that he thinks about how to kind of organize his life, the fact that he, acknowledges that he could walk away from golf if his time was up, and it would, he'd miss it, but it wouldn't be like some of these other guys who you really understand that to be the only way that they can kind of think about their life. And just as an athlete who's as dominant as he is, you just don't hear that very often. And so for me, it was sort of like this opportunity to get this person who is at the top of the game, but who so little had been kind of spoken about, again, beyond the, 10 or 12 things that everybody kind of thinks they know about him.
Yeah. And the story, leads with this idea that he is the sport's most dominant, most inscrutable player. And he is indeed both of those things, at least in terms of, major victories over the last couple years here on the dominant side, certainly the inscrutability. And you kind of referenced this. We've only really gotten to know him over the last 12 months or so, and that maybe 18 months. And it has been coincident with his sort of taking the game by the throat and, putting himself as an item of interest because he's doing relatively unprecedented things, like only Tiger, only Jordan Spieth in kind of recent memory, with the kind of number of majors that he's built up. But, now that he's, a lead item of interest, and the sporting public at large is always curious when somebody comes what feels like out of nowhere and sort of takes over a sport. The sports fans at large want to get to know what it is about that person, what's going on with that person. And so we have this really interesting kind of two-side personality with Brooks, it seems to me, where on the one side, he's very like deliberate in how he appears at the golf course, the press conferences and interviews that occur in that venue. And then the way that he has been candid over the last 12 to 18 months in different kind of fora, podcasts and other kinds of interviews for different media purposes. What did you encounter anything in terms of the two sides of this persona, or do you even agree that there's two sides? Maybe there's more.
No, I do. And it's kind of like, when I was talking with Brooks, it reminded me of one other person that I'd written about who has had similar things said about him, which is Russell Westbrook, and the way that his sort of, you know, maybe it's too strong to say disdain, but just his skepticism of the kind of beat reporters and their questions and that sort of the innocuous kind of grinding on the same five or six things, or, you know, starting every question with how'd you play today? You know, he seems to have zero patience for that kind of thing. And so on the one hand, there is an inscrutability that is both a sort of frustration with that kind of coverage of him, combined with this fact, and he gets into it in the piece about the way that he is so deliberate about not showing any emotion when he's playing, not reacting to shots positively or negatively, because he's watching all the other competitors who are within, you know, kind of the periphery of him, and he's assuming that they're watching him. So to give them anything visual beyond, as he puts it, just the one sense of the sound of the ball, that would be like giving them an athletic advantage in this competition that maybe he's the only one that's playing it quite this way, in the sense of like he's trying to win a one-on-one that maybe the other person doesn't know that they're playing, but he's thinking about it in those ways that really turns him into this sort of like icy block that I think I get why fans, I was one of them, were kind of like, I just don't get this guy. Like he's so dominant, but you don't see any of the emotion that you get from any of the other players, with the ups and downs, the disappointments, or that sort of like, you know, euphoria with a great shot coming down the stretch of one of the majors. It was just so cold-blooded that it's challenging to, and makes one think like, oh, I wonder how much is going on in there. At the same time, apparently this was all just sort of, you know, roiling beneath the surface. And he was kind of waiting for people to start asking about this sort of stuff. And once he got that, that platform, he was really, it seems like the feedback has been very positive for him, whether it's sort of, you know, tussling with Bryson DeChambeau or Rory McIlroy or, people that kind of come at him about things, the kind of positive feedback to that sort of sharp elbowed, way of just talking to some of those other guys, or, you know, coming out and being like, oh, I think I can say some things about the game of golf, or maybe some of these announcers, or maybe the way that courses are set up, you know, the things that you saw dominant players of their time always kind of pushing on the boundaries of those things. And it seemed like I just felt it. And just kind of going back to my experience writing some of these sports profiles where I get to be a bit of an outsider, I'm not covering these guys daily, and they sometimes say things and sometimes they don't. I could tell that he saw this as an opportunity to really kind of go long on some of these answers and really talk about some of the stuff that I'm sure he's been thinking about, you know, since he was a young player, but just kind of hadn't had the opportunity to be like, okay, I'm just going to really start to say that stuff. And so I totally agree with you that there are these two things. And sometimes they're contradictory. That's another funny thing about him, is sometimes the things he says, you know, he can be like, you know, this way about golf is not the way I want it, and kind of turn around and you know, I'm just thinking about even some of his criticisms of private golf and country club golf in the piece. But he himself, of course, belongs to clubs that he plays out of as a professional and things like that. So there, I think he's working through a lot of this stuff and really adapting to the spotlight, and I've kind of enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, and there are a couple of things that you touched on that I want to follow up on. There is kind of this psychological aspect to his competitive instincts that kind of serves as a through line throughout the story. It touches on his relationships with other players on tour, and it touches on his demeanor, and you know, it definitely affects the relatability that we've been looking for, you know, golf fans in the first place, and then the greater sporting public at large, as Brooks's successes have put him on a, you know, more prominent worldwide kind of stage. But I'm interested, I want to start with a little bit of like behind the scenes, if it's okay, because I'm just like some of the sort of interaction that came through in the piece felt like kind of new information relating to Brooks, and I use that literally, like relating to Brooks. I'm trying to, you know, see him in his daily existence, and then, you know, try and put that together along with the great success that he's had, you know, as part of the, you know, as a fan of the game. How did you like reach out to him, and what was the initial interaction like?
I had kind of had my eye on a potential story on him for those reasons that I was mentioning earlier, of just sort of like, I couldn't remember the last time had the opportunity to really do the first big profile on an athlete of that stature. Sometimes you get people when they're just starting out or coming up or maybe on the comeback or whatever it is, but to get somebody at their, you know, what feels like a peak or maybe the early part of a peak, and kind of be able to tell that story for the first time was really exciting. And I think that they understood that. I think the fact that it was a venue like GQ instead of a Sports Illustrated or an ESPN, which he had done certain things with, or a Golf Digest, but our whole thing, in a lot of these pieces is to get that off field, off arena, off course life, in there. And I think that was interesting to him too, that I was as interested kind of in his life and Southern Florida and what he does in between tournaments and things like that. And so in that sense, our interests align. I remember thinking, I was telling somebody after I came back, I'm like, this is one of those rare stories where like what Brooks thinks is interesting about himself and I think is interesting about him actually align, which is not always the case with athletes. Like, I think he just kind of felt like there was a lot more that he wanted to say, and that was sort of what we wanted to get at. But in terms of just like interacting with him and personality wise, one thing that I found refreshing also, I mean, just the we had dinner the first night I was in town, which is in Jupiter, Florida, which many of your listeners will know as, you know, the home of probably a quarter of professional golfers on the LPGA or the Senior or Korn Ferry or PGA Tour. And so, you know, it's the total hub of these places, of these guys living down there. And yet he kind of keeps to himself in the area. I think he hangs out with Dustin a little bit, but otherwise it's him, it's his girlfriend, Jenna. It is these buddies from West Palm, where he grew up, which is about 20 minutes south of Jupiter. And so he's very, very comfortable there. The first night we went out to dinner at this Michael Jordan and Ernie Els owned restaurant in Jupiter, which is, you know, kind of funny in and of itself. Gary Player was hanging out there. They had a nice little interaction. He was like super loose, comfortable. The hostess was somebody he went to high school with. Was upstairs, had, you know, three or four cocktails, ordered, you know, plenty of food. There was none of this sort of like, oh, I don't want to, you know, get loose in front of the reporter kind of thing, which I really like that. You know, it's the opposite of, okay, you can meet us at the locker room and, you know, do a half hour or something. And so, you know, that dinner was a few hours, and then did some more stuff the day after. I was over at the house, as I describe in the piece. You know, he's kicked back for a lot of the afternoon, you know, with a lip or a Kodiak, and kind of just kicked back talking about this and that and golf and politics and all this stuff. His dog Cove is running around their yard. He's got his boat tied up down on the little river there. He's always out on the boat. You know, if I'm not mistaken, one of his only sponsors is Michelob Ultra, which kind of like tells you something about him, but that's like the one he went after. And so you get a sense of this sort of like, he was talking about like how he never wears sunscreen. He didn't, when they were taking his photo for the magazine, the stylist had suggested he put some boat shoes on for the shot, and he looked at her like that was the craziest thing in the world that he would own a pair of boat shoes. So it's just like funny little things that, yeah, you haven't got from him, but when you kind of think about it, it's like, oh, this makes sense. As a person who grew up down here, played golf down here, went to Florida State, like the Florida of it all is very much a part of the sort of the low-key aspect. Also, like his kind of criticism of of some of the stuffier elements of golf, I think, comes from really regarding himself as being very laid back, very very cool about kind of just hanging out, except when he's on the golf course and he, you know, just wants to crush you, basically.
Yeah, right. So I'm interested. One of the things that maybe it was deliberate, but it's also consistent with some of the persona that we've seen out of him in these moments of candor that are, you know, sort of increasingly frequent. Like, he's kind of on a heater lately, but
totally.
is the role of an outsider that it seems like, and this came through in the story, which is why I'm asking you about it, because of his relatively unique bursting upon the scene and the way that he developed his talent, which was, you know, he was a talented golfer and you know, played in college, but didn't go from college immediately on to tour, instead went to Europe. And he was not super dominant in high school or as a junior. He wasn't playing in the kinds of tournaments where he would be in proximity to other guys that are now on tour. And you know, leaving the country as, you know, a new graduate from college and going to Europe and touring around Europe had him necessarily not, you know, sort of in the circles of other aspiring PGA professionals. And so his sort of return to the U.S. and his bursting on the scene with this enormous amount of incredible success in what feels like a relatively compressed time frame, he has, he gives off this vibe of, you know, sitting on the outside of the inner golf sanctum with one eyebrow raised. Is that accurate? Did you encounter that with him?
Yeah, definitely. And there's something interesting. This kind of goes to the slight contradictions where he very much has that. I think I said in the piece, like when I was with him, he talks so much about basketball and football and baseball and those other sports, and really talking about the athleticism of the kind of golf he wants to play, that it reminded me of, you know, Happy Gilmore's "I'm a hockey player, but I'm playing golf today" sort of thing, where it's like, well, you know, you're not actually that. Like, this is the sport that you're the number one player in the world at, but it kind of can't totally deal with that yet, and that's kind of interesting. At the same time, I remember reading pieces a few years ago when he first emerged on tour, where he was saying things like, in my mind, I'm already in that group with Jordan, Rory, and Jason, even though I'm not in it, nowhere near it yet. Like he had this sort of irrational confidence. As you mentioned, he wasn't a dominant junior player. He played at Florida State, but it's not like he was, the consensus number one All-American or anything like that. And so he has this combination of kind of being that outsider and maybe a chip on his shoulder from not having that success, but also having that irrational confidence. I mean, even just we were talking about that, not a lot. I hadn't seen a lot about his high school days, and I was asking him like when he kind of first knew that he could be a dominant player, and like he really wasn't winning junior tournaments even. And yeah, I don't know if you remember Ty Tryon, who turned pro when he was 16. He was a Florida kid,
sure.
and he was looking at Ty Tryon being like, oh, that's what I want to do. Like, then I can skip college and just go straight to the PGA Tour. So this was like a young kid who wasn't winning junior tournaments, but was had planned out this route for himself to become a pro without even going to college. So there's this funny combination of again, like being almost like the ultimate insider, which is like, I can take this inside track and kind of beat golf, while also maintaining that credibility of not just, like we were talking about, of the kind of outsiderness as an athlete, but in the piece, we spent a lot of time talking about other golfers, other pro golfers, and how, you know, he says he was kind of proud of the fact that he doesn't really hang out with those guys at Tiger's restaurant, the Woods, or Square Grouper and in Jupiter, or those places where, you know, a lot of these guys will post pictures from, once they win and come back to Jupiter or whatever. Like, he really likes that sort of separateness. And I think that it probably fuels him a little bit. I mean, like he, it's not in the story, but I remember him telling an anecdote where like his worst nightmare was like, would be being in a share house where like he would come in from the round and like talk about the course with like some of the guys he's competing with, you know, like it's very important to him to be like very separate from that. And, you know, when he goes to majors, he gets a house and it's a very small group of people, his caddy, Ricky Elliott, his girlfriend, Jenna, maybe one or two reps or something like that. But it's very different than some of those guys who, you know, maybe pile into a big house to share costs or whatever. And I found that really, really interesting that, and maybe, you know, that's part of the secret sauce of the majors. Even he mentioned they even started bringing a personal chef with them on those sorts of things. And I found that interesting, just that sheer like focus of I'm really not interacting with these other players.
Yeah, I'm interested in one aspect of that, which is there is kind of a fine line between the swagger that he unmistakably gives off and that he exudes, he's clearly confident, he shows confidence, and arrogance. And I, this is not a Joe House word, this is more of a sort of traditional golf media kind of thing, where there folks wonder aloud whether or not Brooks, you know, is carrying around and arrogance, and arrogance doesn't necessarily have to be a bad word in this context. It could mean the same as swagger. But you know, when he's out there naming names, like he's called out Bryson DeChambeau, he called out Patrick Reed. You know, he was asked about slow play in the context of playing with JB Holmes, and he was you know, quite candid. He didn't say JB's name, but he definitely was candid in sharing his views on the impacts of slow play and how little enthusiasm he has for it. Do you think that it's deliberate for him, you know, with this swagger slash kind of arrogance and his own standing amongst that group?
I have to imagine it is. It reminds me, I'm sitting here smiling as you say all that stuff, because it does seem it's such a rare thing in golf. And yeah, that's the sort of stuff that gets me excited about him, is that I really think, again, like he's sort of like, how can I make this a little more like basketball or something, you know, this guy who loves the NBA. And that's the sort of thing that you can imagine, you know, sort of his favorite players in the NBA doing, in the way that, you know, when he talks about athletes that he models himself after and worships. I mean, our reporting, was kind of later in the fall. And, we talked a lot about Kobe and just the way that there was so much sort of internal focus, but when the time came to say something or speak up, and from that platform, you know, that was the way to do that. And I don't know, there's just something about that I find very refreshing, and to kind of have people finally speaking up a little bit. You know, we'll see how what kind of effect it has, but it's important when I think that he probably, as he would say, like was feeling all these things for a while, but just kind of nobody was asking about it, because when you're, you know, when before you're a guy who's won four majors, you know, maybe they're less interested in some of those things and want you to toe the tour line a little bit more or whatever. But I find it very, very kind of refreshing to have a little more conversation going on about things like that.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, the point you make is exactly the right one, which is you don't really hear it from other guys. There are not a lot of other guys out there calling out names, and you know, responding to questions where players are named, and you know, giving a candid answer in response to that. I'm going to let you go in a minute, but I have one thing that I absolutely positively need to hear about, which is you're a golfer. You grew up playing competitive golf in high school, and you mentioned in the story that you were able to get out to the golf course just to sort of catch him in his element, you know, getting a little practice in by playing. Did you have your sticks with you?
I had them in the car, but I wasn't going to impose myself on that practice round for him.
Okay.
So it was pretty great. It was pretty great though, to be able to, you know, obviously we all see these guys, from outside the ropes or get a close look, but it is kind of fun to really be right on top of it like that and go around for a few holes and watch him on the range. But no, didn't get to play directly with him, but got to see him. He joined up with his his brother happened to be at the course that we were at. Got to watch them play a little friendly match together.
Yeah, you mentioned that. I was hoping that you got him to rate your swing. I was hoping you got some Brooks Koepka feedback, because you know that he'd tell the truth.
He definitely would.
It's a great story. It's in the March issue of GQ magazine, available online and at newsstands everywhere. Danny Reilly, I'm going to let you go, but you in the same way we've been talking about the duality of Brooks, you have a whole nother persona, a whole nother professional interest, and that is, as a novelist, you have a book coming out.
That's right. So it's magazine stories and these books. And so the new novel is coming out in a couple months here. It's called Barcelona Days from Little Brown. And it's a fairly different world than professional golf in Southern Florida. But hopefully if you like what you read, you'll check that out too.
What's it about? Are you allowed to say?
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's about some young Americans and in Barcelona who get stuck there when, do you remember that Icelandic volcano that went off and kind of trapped people for a little while in Europe a few years ago. And so kind of premised on that, but it's about kind of late 20s relationships and these four Americans who kind of are trying to figure out their lives and blowing things up a little bit.
Oh, I love it. And if you had known that you were going to interview Brooks Koepka, you could have maybe gotten some research for him, because he did spend some time.
That's right. The Americans in Europe, it's a favorite topic of mine. Maybe that is what ultimately was the difference maker for Brooks, is he has a little flavor from those years abroad.
Well, there we go. Daniel Raleigh, the next time you write about golf, you have to come on again.
Yeah. Thank you, House. I really appreciate this. This was a lot of fun to do.
Thanks, buddy. Talk to you again soon. All right, there we go. Thank you, Danny Reilly. One of the known advantages that Brooks Koepka possesses in these major tournaments is his putting. I have to use this opportunity to talk about the brand new Odyssey Golf Triple Track putters. When it comes to putting, alignment, arguably the most important part of that equation, which is why Odyssey continues to set the standard for alignment performance with their brand new triple track putters. There are three distinct alignment lines centered on every triple track putter head. And if you're using the triple track balls, which you're supposed to be using, you can line them up. The triple track balls are available in the ERC model, in the Chrome Soft model. You line them up. It's shocking how much easier it is when you have the putter and the ball all with the lines. It's the same visual technology used to land jet airplanes on aircraft carriers. It's that reliable and accurate. Once you're lined up correctly, obviously you can focus on making a great stroke just the way that Brooks Koepka does in the majors with a consistency-enhancing stroke lab shaft. Get lined up with the new triple track putters at odysseygolf.com. Odyssey, the number one putter in golf. All right, we're going to talk about this gambling platform, this collaboration between Action Network and the PGA Tour, and we're also going to get some picks on the Arnold Palmer Invitational with our boy Jason Sobel. But before we get over there, I want to talk to you about Nobu Los Cabos. Nobu Hotel Los Cabos, the first Nobu hotel in Mexico. The 200-room property seamlessly blends contemporary Japanese minimalism with locally sourced natural Mexican materials and finishes. Guests at Nobu Hotel Los Cabos have access to two exclusive golf courses designed by golf legends Davis Love III and Tiger Woods. You've heard of that guy. At Diamante Cabo San Lucas, the Dunes course by DL3 was ranked number 36 in the world, by Golf Magazine in 2017, and the number one course in all of Mexico, named that by Golf Digest in 2016. The hotel features world-renowned dining options, including an oceanfront Nobu restaurant and a farm-to-table restaurant, Malibu Farm. They have four infinity pools featuring private swim-up cabanas, private beach cabanas, four super cabanas, equipped with a full bathroom, day bed, living area, TV. You can live that luxe life at the Nobu Hotel. The Essentia Wellness. This is a giant gym and yoga and spa joint. 13,000 square feet with 3,000 square feet of full service gym equipment. Get that pump. Get that Brooks pump going. An indoor outdoor yoga and spinning area. Visit NobuHotelLosCabos.com or contact your preferred travel professional. My par saving pals, this episode also brought to us by Sales Genie, a product of Info Group. If you are in sales, marketing, or you own your own business, I own my own business. Listen up. For nearly 50 years, Info Group has helped professionals succeed just like you, just like me. We all know the number one reason salespeople and businesses fail in general is because they're challenged in finding new clients or customers. I'm here to tell you all you need is the right audience to call on or market to. Sales Genie. It's the proven way to find, acquire, and retain customers. Now, Sales Genie can't make you pick up the phone or bring your next customer to your doorstep, but it will provide you all the B2B and B2C audiences for prospecting, whether it's calling, direct mail, email, or display advertising. If you are serious about finding your next customer and growing your business, give Sales Genie a call for your free 14-day trial. Call 866-485-7599 or go to www.salesgenie.com/golf. That's salesgenie.com/golf, or you can do it the human being way. Call 866-485-7599. All right, my par-saving pals, now on the tee. From the Action Network, he's also a contributor to Sirius XM PGA Tour and Sirius XM Fantasy. Jason Sobel, what's happening, buddy?
Life is good. I'm doing well. If we're now on the tee, I always take two off the tee. So I get a first one if I duck hook it, right?
You are at home. This is exactly, we are all about a breakfast ball just to get ourselves situated.
There we go.
Speaking of breakfast ball, I feel like I might need to grant you a mulligan because, first of all, that's way too many dumb golf jokes. But this just announced collaboration between Action Network and the PGA Tour in this co-branded collaboration golf bet. You were on this show like a month ago. We were talking golf betting, and there was no, you didn't give any hinting. There was no hints. But it obviously had to have been in the works.
It was definitely in the works. It's funny. I've had people come up to me at the Arnold Palmer Invitational today, and I've had a bunch of people come up to me saying, did you know this was happening? I'm like, yeah, I knew it was happening. I knew it was happening for a long time. Of course I knew. And I was trying not to drop any hints, maybe some subtle ones. But, yeah, it's a great move for us. It's a great move for the PGA Tour. It's an even better move. I'm going to sound like a press release here, but even a better move for golf fans out there and bettors and people that want to be more informed about the game. It just means more data, more information, more content, both on our site and the PGA Tour site work together. So golf bets can be really, really good.
So help me understand, what is it?
It's a great question. Basically, it's a content sharing platform where we're going to keep doing what we do, except more of it. And more on their space as well, and they're going to be sharing stuff with us as well. So basically, we're putting together sort of an all-encompassing platform where if you want to bet every day and very soon, very, very soon, every shot out on the PGA Tour, we're going to be out here watching everything that goes on. We're going to be able to help people who want to have a little action on stuff. And as I always say, I told you how it's last time, even if you don't want action, even if there are people out there that say, I like golf, I just don't want to put my money on it, fine. You know what? I think it makes you more personally invested in what's going on. I think it has gives you more of an interest in day-to-day goings on the PGA Tour. Like we said last time, there are 4 days a week at every seven. There's a PGA Tour event going on. It's really fun to sweat some golf. But even if you're just a golf fan, it makes you smarter about what you're watching.
So in the first place, it will be a source of information, and you'll be able to access it from both Action Network and from the PGA Tour. Will there be buttons on both sites?
Correct. Yeah. And I don't know that all of our content will be on their site. All of their content will be on our site, but yeah, it's going to be a collaborative effort between the two of us. And it, like I said, it's just all good things. And, you know, quite honestly, I think they wanted to get into the gaming space. I don't know that they wanted to do it themselves. They kind of wanted to farm it out a little bit. So we formed this partnership where we're working with the PGA Tour, and it's really progressive from them. I don't think this was happening. In fact, I know it wasn't happening a year ago. They were not ready to get into this. And the fact that they are now, and they see the benefits of getting fans more invested in what they're watching, more engaged, it's a really good thing moving forward.
Well, as you know, and in fact, you just documented in a great story that's on Action Network right now that everybody should go check out, about this most recent weekend at the Honda Classic. You had a pal in town. You have an annual convening of pals, and you wrote in heartbreaking detail about the personal relationship that we gamblers, people that have a little skin in the game, even DFS, you know, if you have entering daily fantasy lineups, the personal relationships we develop with the players on tour competing in the events, and the up close and personal interaction that you and your buddy had with Brendan Steele last week, right?
So I've been out here for 16 years. I've never had a more fun piece that I've written. I've probably written better pieces. This was more fun to write than anything I've ever done. So basically what it was, a buddy of mine came down to play in a golf tournament for the weekend of the Honda Classic. And I'm buddies with Brendan Steele. I was walking with him during the program on Wednesday afternoon. I said, "Hey, by the way, you got any extra tickets? My buddy's coming into town." Said, yeah, here you go. So I texted my friend. I said, "Hey, Steele just gave me a few tickets, so you're all set for the weekend." And he texted back immediately, $100 on Brendan Steele outright to win at 100-1. And so he knew he was coming. We were going to sweat it the whole weekend. Didn't know how much we'd be sweating it, but Steele made a really good run at it. He was leading after two rounds. He was one back going into the final round and came really close, finished the share of fourth place. But man, it was a cool sweat. I documented everything. So it's on actionnetwork.com, the Action Network app. If you want to check it out, it's still up there. It's like I said, about the most fun thing I've ever been able to do out here on the PGA Tour, as far as something that I wrote, really bringing a firsthand experience to the users out there.
Yeah, but that's what GolfBet represents in terms of the opportunity here, in terms of, you know, the kind of information that the tour will be sharing, that Action Network will be sharing, where you can identify some longer shot guys, you know, and try and create this idea of value. And I know you have your Arnold Palmer Invitational entry up on the site right now, and that it begins with this idea of value. But this is, I think, now let me ask this question. GolfBet is just going to be information, right? You can't also from the site go and attempt to place bets. Is that correct?
You will not be able to place bets, but we do have affiliates where you go kind of through us and click onto the affiliates and place bets through there. So there is that. You can't place bets, but we will, yes, we'll give you the information. And fairly soon, we're going to have a whole lot of data up there as well, I think. I think that's going to happen in the very near future, where you say, "Hey, look, I don't want to listen to Stovall. I want to listen to any of those other guys. I want to make my own decisions." You want to pour through the data. You want to pour through the numbers, the stats. We're going to have that available on our site as well.
Well, one of the things that I'm excited about, and this also fits the story with your pal, is a couple things. In the first place, this feels like we are ushering in the kind of golf gambling menu that we only get four times a year at the majors. And really, the biggest gambling major menu is at the time of the Masters, where there's a whole variety of things that if you're interested in gambling on golf, you can gamble on whether or not there's going to be a hole in one, what the lowest score will be. Mm-hmm. All those kinds of things are only right now available in the majors, but I'm really looking forward to that menu expanding, and that ought to build some interest. But also included in that is the idea of the each way bet, which is, you know, popular in Canada and Europe and not available with any of the books that I mess with domestically. And also some live bet opportunities, both of which, the each way bet and a live bet opportunity, might have helped your boy hedge a little bit with steel on the back nine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if you're looking at 10 grand, there's a hedge out there on a 10 grand bet.
Yeah, that would have been really nice. Again, I'm pumping out some more content here, but I did a Q&A with Jeff Sherman, who's at Golf Odds on Twitter. He's fantastic. He's the is the manager of risk management, VP of risk management at the Superbook USA. I did a Q&A with him. I said, where's the future of golf betting? He said, very soon. Basically, right now, the Masters is sort of like a playoff game in any other sport. And, you know, the weekly events are kind of the regular season games. Very soon, weekly events could look like playoff games, and the Masters looks like the Super Bowl. And I think that's what we're inching towards gradually right now. And we're getting there pretty quickly. So, like I said, I think there's going to be way more live betting options very soon. I would love to see each way betting available here in U.S. books. I would love to see, we talked about it last time, I want to be able to fade guys. I want to be able to short guys. If you don't like a guy going into an event, I want to do matchups, not just the one or two guys that you find in your book against that guy, but I want 100 matchups against the guy if I really don't like him on a given week. I think that could be something that has a ton of value to bettors out there. So again, we're getting there. We're in the process of it. I think if we had this pod 3 years, 5 years from now, maybe not even that far down the line, we'll say, can you remember a time when if you had to bet against a guy in a PGA Tour event, there was only one other guy you could take him against? That was ridiculous. We are really in the rudimentary stages right now of what golf betting is and is becoming, and it's going to get much bigger. This is not going to stay stagnant for much longer.
Yeah, the legendary make the cut and miss the cut parlays that are going to be available through this is just going to be so much fun. All the whole cottage industry of cut sweat and everything along those lines. I want to talk about the API, the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Get your feelings. It is in your backyard. But before we get there, I just have to make one last plea. Can we, on this collaborative information platform, figure out some way that doesn't make the guys feel self-conscious or you know, discloses any confidences? Can we get an injury report of some kind? Something that just says, like, when guys, like the last time somebody had a knee surgery or something. We have, because the fact we heard just a few weeks ago, Brooks Koepka played the Genesis and complained on Thursday that his knee hurt more than in any time other than when he had the surgery. And that would have been good information to know if you were somebody investing a little bit in Brooks that week.
I think that as far as we'll get is so-and-so had surgery and he's out for 4 to 6 weeks. I think that that's a very good possibility in the near future that, you know, if a guy isn't playing golf, that he will be on some injury report. I can't see, though, where a player shows up Monday afternoon at a tournament, registers at the tournament, and there's a line on his registration that says injury status. And the guy says, well, my elbow kind of hurts this week. I'm going to play, but, you know, I don't feel great. I just don't see them giving up sort of that sort of personal information. And quite frankly, I don't know if the surgery type injury reports really help you, because if a guy's not playing that week, you're not betting on him anyway. And so if Brooks Koepka has knee surgery and he's out for 2 months, you're not making a bet on Brooks Koepka. You know that he's out. And so Brooks saying, hey, my knee's hurting more than it had in the past. Boy, that would really help you on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday when you're going into the event. I just don't envision us finding out that information without guys like me out here talking to 120, 144, 156 players in the field and finding out the injury status of every single guy, which quite frankly is absolutely impossible.
Sobel, but that's what I'm asking for. I mean, this collaboration has to be helpful in terms of building out additional resources. I mean, we can split it up. Each journalist gets 10 guys. Anyway, I understand. But I do think through an information platform like this, to the extent that there is information, this happens quite a bit with Jason Day, where he's always candid. Sure. And this is one of the things I admire about him. People give him a hard time because he's often in some kind of physical distress, but he also does disclose it in kind of real time and lets you go ahead and navigate around him appropriately?
Well, without a coach or without a trainer, really. I mean, in the NBA, the trainer will check out a guy at the morning shoot around and he'll say, you know, this guy's questionable for tonight. Hopefully, if, you know, his ankle looks better when they get there at the game, you know, hopefully he'll give it a go. Whereas it's all opinion basically out here. So Jason Day is a guy who, you're right, he's very upfront, very honest about what's hurting him, what's ailing him at the moment. And Jason Day would probably consider himself questionable on any given week just because he's a little more pessimistic than other guys, whereas other guys might have the same injury or something worse and say, yeah, I'm fine. Don't worry about me. I'll be fine. I'm playing this week.
Okay. Well, we'll agree to have it a work in progress. I mean, it's just information. All we're after at the end of the day is any unique information that might help, because this is such splitting hairs, as everybody knows who reads your columns on the Action Network and building DFS lineups and what we try and do here on Fairway Rolling, which is try and give out a couple winners. I want to talk about the API and begin with this week in Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods!
And this week in Tiger Woods, he's not playing the API.
He's not playing. I don't pick him this week. How's that sound?
It's a great call by you. I can see this collaboration with the tour is already paying off. This just real quick. What is the word? Your boots on the ground there with you know the tour machine. The Players is next week, and the indications are that Tiger wants to be ready for the Players and for the match play event before the Masters. What's the sentiment on the ground about Tiger?
Well, first things first, before he didn't commit last week and when we were still kind of up in the air as to whether Tiger would play this week, I remember telling someone, if he commits, that means that last year when he said he had a little bit of a neck injury and didn't play here last year after being an 8-time champion, that, you know, okay, he really had an injury. If he didn't play last year and came back this year, it really was something that was bothering him a year ago. Instead, if he wasn't going to play this week, then that just means I don't know that he's ever playing the Arnold Palmer Invitational again. I just don't know that it's on the schedule. Based on where it sits in the schedule right now, and they're going to change things up a little bit next year, it was reported that the Honda is going to move after the Players' Championship, but I don't think that helps Tiger's chances of playing the API at all, because the API is still going to be 1 week ahead of the Players' Championship. I just don't know that we'll see him back here. And maybe ceremonially in a few years when he's up there a little bit in age and wants to reminisce a little and come back here and relive those old memories. But I'm just not sure we see Tiger back here. So yes, he wants to get ready for the Players. Yes, he wants to get ready for presumably the match play. But honestly, he wants to get ready for the Masters. They had a teleconference call, as they do every year, with the Masters champion last Tuesday. And Tiger outright said, I need to get myself ready for the Masters. And that's the foremost thing on my mind right now. And according to him, the Arnold Palmer Invitational is not going to get him ready for the Masters. And it's hard to argue with him. I mean, obviously it worked in past years when he won here and went to the Masters and played really well. But last year, didn't play here and won the Masters. So how are you going to argue he should come back here this year and try to play and try to give it a go and maybe tax his body a little bit too much before he gets to Augusta in April.
Right. And we are at this juncture of his career where he has to be so selective, because even when he is in shape and in form, he experiences fatigue. And, you know, we saw it at the President's Cup. He was out there kicking ass on Thursday and Friday and had to completely shut it down on Saturday so that he could participate in the single match on Sunday. I mean, I think that is just a sheer function of the numbers game that is Tiger Woods' potential schedule on tour now, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And for as much as we would love to see him come to the Arnold Palmer Invitational this week and win this event, then go play the Players and play well, and then go play Tampa where he finished second place a couple of years ago, and then play a few more and get into the Masters with a whole bunch of starts under his belt. We as fans, we as people in the game would love to see that. I just don't think, first of all, it's feasible. And secondly, if you want to see Tiger go out and try to defend his Masters title, the best way for him to do it is to take some rest and take some weeks off and not be playing right now and be ready for the Masters, because you don't want a tired Tiger, a worn out Tiger going to Augusta. Obviously, that's not going to work well for him.
No, and we know what that looks like. We saw it at the PGA Championship last year where he didn't have any time at all to recover after the Masters win, and it was enormously draining physically, emotionally, spiritually. So that's not a knock, but you know, we know what it looks like when he's fatigued. I think the same was true of the Open Championship. I think, you know, he'd done some worldwide international travel and he was having a hard time getting his body clock synced up, even though I don't remember, it was Instagram post or something about setting his alarm clock. But in any event, okay, so we're on the same page. We want Tiger healthy and at the height of his powers for the Masters. And if the price that we have to pay in the meantime is seeing him in some regular tour events that he's previously put his stamp on, I'm willing to pay that price because I want to see him perform well at the majors. Speaking of performing well and kind of streaky behavior, though, I want to talk about the fact that the international players have won each of the past four of these events. And we're in this kind of international moment right now because a whole bunch of guys from the international team at the President's Cup in December keep kicking ass on tour this year, including Sung Jae-im, who just won the Honda a handful of days ago. So what are you expecting?
So good.
He's unbelievable. I am kicking myself for not having anything on him. I've had him in lineups for a year now. How did we miss?
Too. I'm right there with you.
With a little bit on SJ. He's a bomber. He's a killer. And to his great credit, speaking of guys and the numbers game, and he plays every tournament that's available. If there's a golf tournament on the calendar, a professional golf tournament, he's in it. He plays the most rounds of anybody.
He doesn't have a home. Seriously.
That's right.
He doesn't have a home. He doesn't live anywhere. You know where he lives? He lives wherever the tour is playing that week. And he goes and stays in a hotel, and then he goes to the next event, and he lives there for a week. That's unbelievable to me. I mean, as a guy who's out on the road following the PGA Tour at 15 to 18 times a year, I'm telling you, when you get back home, there's nothing like it. You get to sleep in your own bed. You get to see your friends. You get to just be away from the game a little bit. I love not being on the road after doing this for so long. I love being on the road, but I love being off the road as well and being at home. And the fact that he doesn't even have a home because the guy just wants to go out and play golf every single week is really, first of all, impressive. Secondly, it goes to show, and I think a lot of young players today, a lot of the 21, 22, 23-year-old up-and-coming superstars tend to look at the blueprint set by Tiger, by Rory, by guys who are very selective in their schedules. And they say, look, you've got to get your downtime and you can't go out there every single week. Maybe now some of these young guys look at Sungjae and they say, you know, the more events you play, the more chance you have at winning. And it's just a numbers game. And Sungjae might've looked at, if he was playing a selective schedule, might have said, you know, the Honda, it's leading into a big stretch and it's always windy there. And I don't know if I want to, you know, go after it that week and tax my body. And he very well, if he was being more selective, like other guys his age, who are really good players out here on tour, he might have said, you know, I'm going to skip it and move on. And he wouldn't have won that golf tournament. But instead, going out there every week gives yourself a chance. And he took that chance and he ran with it. And he's now a PGA Tour champion. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him win one or two more times for the rest of the year as well.
Yeah, I am in the exact same position as you. And you hit on the sort of the key factor, which is his age. He's only 21. And, you know, living this kind of on the road lifestyle, that's definitely a young man's game. And I from the stories that I've seen about him living this lifestyle, he has his parents, support. I don't know how much they actually are traveling with him from venue to venue, but I know I've seen stories that suggest he has decent infrastructure and that he's just grinding. You know, it's just, he's singularly focused. He recognizes that this is an opportunity for him at this stage of his life, and he's just happy grinding. So that's what he does.
Yeah, and at some point, he's going to say, look, I need a break. At some point, the guy's going to get tired. He looks like an absolute machine right now. First, the number of events that he plays, and secondly, the swing looks like an iron Byron. It looks like he's just out there with the exact same swing every time he hits the ball. But at some point, you grow up a little, you say, look, I want to live somewhere. I don't want my parents around all the time. You know, we all get to that point. We're like, hey, it's time to, you know, fly away from the nest a little bit. He's certainly got enough money to go do whatever he wants to do now. And you would think he'd get away from it at some point a little bit. You know, now that he can set the schedule, he's in every major championship, every WGC. And that's really, that's a big nut for a lot of these guys out here. It's not just the check that comes with winning. It's not just the prestige and the trophy. It's being able to set your schedules, being able to say, all right, well, now I can go wherever I want, whenever I want, and play the tournaments where the big boys are playing. And the fact that he's going to go out, presumably, and maybe he changes his strategy now based on the fact that he's won, but presumably keeps playing every single week. Again, he just gives himself more chances. And if his body can take it and his mind and his heart are still into it, then more power to him.
Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, let's talk about some guys that you like for this week. It's a packed field, notwithstanding Tiger not being part of it, because the Euros are all here now for this run from the Players Championship next week up through the Masters. So we have the potential for great international fields, plus all the U.S. guys. Who are you looking at for the Arnold Palmer Invitational?
Well, first of all, before I get into it, Rory's going to wreck all our cards, isn't he? I mean, Rory at 5-1, 5.5-1 in a field of 120 players. It's just, he's very, very well going to win this golf tournament. He's playing so well. He's got 6 straight top 5 finishes around the world. And you know, if you're playing DFS lineups, absolutely throw him in there and then try to get a couple of cheaper guys to balance it out later in the lineup. But I can't bring myself to bet on a guy who's 5-1, 5.5-1. Maybe guys out there that are betting big money on events and can have a little return on investment can go out there and say, hey, look, I think he's going to win. And even at those short odds, I'm still going to take him. But I'm starting the card a little bit deeper. I love Bryson DeChambeau. I think Bryson's about to go on a run. I spoke with him for about 15 minutes after he finished in 5th place at Riviera a few weeks ago. And he said, look, I put on about 25 pounds of muscle in the offseason. We all know that. Said almost immediately, I was hitting my drives much further than I ever had before, which is great. That was the whole reason I did this. But my wedges weren't where I needed them to be. And my short game was not the way I had been playing it for the last few years out here on tour. And so it took him a while to get dialed in with the short game. But he told me after Riviera, he goes, I got it now. I finally got it dialed in. The next week, finished runner-up in Mexico, had a chance to win that one, got knocked back at the stretch, down the stretch by Patrick Reed, who won that golf tournament. But a 5th place and a 2nd place finish for Bryson in his last 2 starts. He was runner-up here a couple of years ago to Rory, so he's got some good history at this event. Like Bryson a lot. I like Hideki Matsuyama, another guy trending in the right direction, 6th or better in his last 2 starts. He's never missed a cut here at the API. Two guys who, quite frankly, I'm looking for them to build on those good recent trends and maybe go into Augusta as guys who aren't necessarily favorites, you know, aren't way down the board, but aren't favorites of guys that we could bet at Augusta and we have a good feeling about going into that one. And then I look a little bit further down because each of the last 3 winners of the primary events, take out Victor Hovland in Puerto Rico because he was the favorite there and he won. But the primary events on the PGA Tour, so you had the Genesis where Adam Scott won. He was 30-1 pre-tournament. You had Mexico. Patrick Reed was 40-1. And last week, Sung Jae Im at the Honda, he was 30-1. So there's a little sweet spot there. It's these guys that are kind of 10th to 15th on the odds board coming in. Certainly names that you know, but not necessarily the favorites in the field. And so I'm looking in that area. And the guy that I look at that I really like this week, again, with some course history, finished runner-up here last year, Matt Fitzpatrick. He's been good but not great this year. I expect him to have a really nice kind of Florida swing moving in towards the Masters. Again, another guy that I think can play well at the Masters. I'm not sure I'd go as far as to pick him to win, but DFS lineups, top 5, top 10 bets. I like Matt Fitzpatrick a lot, and I'm picking him to win based on that recent trend that we've seen over the last few weeks.
I like that, and I especially like it because you took the pressure off of me from having to take Bryson, because Bryson is very high on my card also. Just didn't want to have to confess it. All right, I'm going to do my Callaway Golf Maverick driver pick of the week for the Arnold Palmer Invitational. So Callaway knows, Sobel, you can't create new distance by doing the same old, same old. It takes unconventional thinking to create something transformative, like picking a winner. And that's what Callaway did with this brand new Maverick driver. It has a flash-based technology that was designed using advanced artificial intelligence. And the Maverick driver is off to a dominant start in 2020, helping Callaway lead the way as the number one driver brand across the major worldwide tours this year. Okay, so I liked both Bryson and Hideki. I'm glad you gave them out. Fitzpatrick is terrific value at, what is he? What'd you say, 50 to 1?
40.
40 to 1. That's great value. I'm looking at another guy at 40 to 1 that also fits a couple of the top line trend lines here. A guy that's a little bit off the beaten path just in terms of showing up on our golf radar screens, but has an impeccable resume here at Bay Hill. I'm going to go with Henrik Stenson. You haven't heard his name a ton because he's been playing in Europe and hasn't been over here in the States doing PGA Tour events, but he did just win Tiger's event down in the Bahamas in December, which suggests good form as the new year arrived. And he had played in both Dubai and Saudi Arabia and was perfectly competent at both of those venues. The reason I'm taking him, he loves Bay Hill. He owns Bay Hill. 5 top tens in the last 7 trips to Bay Hill. And, you know, a guy that you don't worry about if the wind picks up, because his ball striking is always the thing. And his experience there, he is not going to feel out of place if we get weird wind like what occurred at the Honda last week. And by weird, I just mean intense. It's not weird that it's windy at those venues sometimes. I just mean, you know, it was a little unexpected and it changed directions over the course of the 4 days. So if that happens here at the API, Henrik can handle it. What do you think about Henrik Stenson?
I hate that pick because I'm totally on the same page with you. And this is going so wrong so far because you and I are just agreeing on everything, and that can't be good. Henrik Stenson, I like him. I haven't picked him to win or necessarily top five. He's my favorite matchup bet. I'm already on record. My favorite matchup this week, Henrik Stenson plus money against Jason Day. We mentioned Day earlier. He's got all these ailments. He said he can't putt for more than half an hour at a time because it hurts too much. And yeah, he's actually played okay this year. He's only played 3 times. He's got a 16th place finish, a 4th place finish, then missed the cut in his last start. But, you know, a little inconsistent. I know Day has played well here, but Henrik Stenson at plus money in that matchup to me is a really, really nice matchup for him. So, yeah, I'm on the same page with you. I really like Henrik Stenson based on the course history. And a lot of people look at him and say, well, another foreign guy, you know, a guy from Sweden coming over here to the States. But this is a home game for Henrik. He lives 20 minutes away. He lives over at Lake Nona, has for a long time. So the fact that he can just roll up here in his own car, park right in the lot, sleep in his own bed, I think that really helps him. And it has over the years.
Well, I think that is a perfect way for all of our Eagle enthusiasts out there. Try and build some lineups. Those are some names that aren't necessarily not chalk names. Rory is the chalk name. And if you have to have something on Rory, wait till the live odds market. Do something a little bit longer shot. Pick a guy in that 40 to 50 range. And then if Rory's just going to kick everybody's ass, go ahead and bite the bullet. Cover your bet with a live bet on Saturday or Sunday morning. Maybe that's a strategy out there for all the birdie buddies. Jason Sobel, always a pleasure. His Twitter, at Jason Sobel, S-O-B-E-L-T-A-N, the Action Network, right? So at Jason Sobel, T-A-N. Thank you for coming on, buddy. We're going to keep an eye out for some of the very first entries here on Golf Bet. We're very excited.
Thanks so much, Alex. Golf Bet's going to be awesome. You and I are either going to win big or we're going to lose big together this week because we're on the same page with everything.
Best of luck to all everybody out there on a little bit of ROI. All right, my par-saving pals, there you go. My thanks to Daniel Riley and Jason Sobel. We are back next week. We're going to recap the API. We're going to preview the Players Championship. I think I'm going to have an actual live human player on the pod next week. Megan Schuster is ready. Golf Social has been building her triumphant 2020 debut with Golf Social. That's next week. And we have a giveaway. You're going to have to listen to next week's show. It's something Maverick. It has to do with bombs. If you want a Maverick that hits bombs, you have to listen to next week's show. We're going to do a massive Maverick giveaway. Until next week, my Eagle enthusiasts, let's hit them straight out there.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease. And the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.